everyone. This is Nicole McElvin with the National Quality Forum. Thank you for calling into the Patient Outcomes Child Health Steering Committee conference call. I hope everyone can hear me okay, and if you can't, just let me know. During our call today, we're going to, after our welcome and introductions, we're just going to provide a brief overview of our work to date, followed by a short review of the measures we have received during our call for measures. And during that time, I also wanted to take some time to talk about a few of the measures that came in that were out of scope that NQF staff have deemed as out of scope and to review that with the committee. The bulk of the call will be spent reviewing the population-based outcome measures. There's four specific measures that were submitted by ARC, and most of our time will be spent reviewing those measures. Most of the committee has reviewed the measures assigned to them and has filled out the survey evaluation, so thank you to everyone who has taken the time to do that and prepare for the call today. And we'll be going through a few of those, few of that information as we walk through and discuss those measures. Some other things I wanted to mention, I do have a webinar up. The webinar, it's not necessary you access the webinar. What we will be displaying is a short PowerPoint presentation on our measure evaluation criteria. You're more than welcome to reference the materials in the PDF that I sent out that have that same criteria in it. The other thing that I'll be displaying are the survey results from the committee members, so basically the results from each evaluation that the committee members have filled out and some of the comments that were provided. So again, you're more than welcome to chime into that webinar if you can't access it or you can't get into it. That's fine as well. Marina and Charlie, did you all want to open up with any comments?
Well, I just want to welcome everybody to the call, and I want to thank you for your participation, and to the extent that you commented on the measures, want to thank you for doing that as well, and want to say that we weren't sure we would have Charlie on, but I'm told that we do, and so that's pretty exciting too. Charlie, you want to say anything?
Well, thank you, Marina. I appreciate your welcome, and I echo what you said. I'm really glad everyone's on the call. I'm glad we have a couple measures to review today. I'm looking forward to reviewing a deeper and longer set in future meetings, and looks like a good start. Thanks a lot.
Okay. And before we jump into the review of the measures, I wanted to take this time and allow any committee members who are on the call who have any conflicts of interest to disclose with the group, you can do so at this time.
Sounds like we're good.
Yeah.
Okay. So I wanted to provide just a quick recap of what we've done to date. As most of you are aware, you met in November to set the stage for our call for measures for child health, and there were a lot of things discussed at the meeting in terms of setting the scope and what type of measures we were looking for. Our call for measures went out in January 4th of this year, closed on February 2nd, and we received about 31 measures, which I'll go through in a minute with you. Received about 31 measures. Most of them were covering outcomes and really, we thought, addressed the scope very nicely, even including some measures around population health, measures around schools and things like that. A few handful of measures, 5 to 6 measures, were looked like more process measures. And so I'll walk you through a few of those in a minute. But that's kind of what we've done to date. And the in-person meeting, as you all know, to evaluate the remaining of the measures is scheduled for May 5th and 6th.
Reba, did you want to add any more comments?
Okay. So the list of measures that we received is available in the handout in the large PDF document that I sent to everyone.
Let me just see if I can...
And I'm not sure if the group has had time to look over it, but what I wanted to do is to briefly talk through a few of the measures that we received, and after NQF staff has looked at them more closely, we have agreed that these are more process measures and out of scope for this project. So we're not going to go through all of the 31 measures individually, just looking at a handful of them, and if I'll then open it up to comment if you all have any further comments on those. If you have the table up, starting with measure 30.
Yep.
Yep.
That makes sense.
Okay. This measure, right, we determined it was more of a process measure, and it's looking at the antibiotic-coated catheter compliance rate. So that was one of the things that we kind of reviewed and said, you know, okay, this looks like more of a process. In addition, if you then go to measure 51, so measures 51, 52, and 53 were actually identified by the measure developer as process measures. And as you can see clearly in the description, they also describe it as a process measure. So those four measures total are the ones that we looked at and as process measures and clearly out of the scope.
So did you say 50 as well as the process measure, not just 51, but 50, whether they received a standardized questionnaire?
No, 51. 51, 52, and 53.
So why would,
The only thing I just want to add is, these last, those that are truly process measures, they don't necessarily have to go away completely. MQF will have another opportunity to where process measures will be more appropriate, so that they're not being eliminated forever.
So 50 also looks like a process measure to me. It's whether a child receives a questionnaire, as opposed to the results of the questionnaire.
Mm-hmm. That measure. That's a good observation. That measure was actually submitted along with about 12 to 13 other measures that were very similar. So we didn't count it out completely yet, and what we thought would be the best idea is to take that to the in-person meeting, since there are several other measures very similar in the same fashion, is to discuss them at the in-person meeting. But I can certainly, you know, mark it on the list as one that the group agrees would probably fall in the process measure bucket.
I agree.
Okay. There is another measure that was actually moved to the mental health project, and that's measure 47, just so you know. Did they take it out of this table?
They took it out.
Okay, there you go. All right.
Do you know what that was?
An inpatient consumer survey looking at the percentage of adolescent clients who adolescents and adults. And the submitter it was looking at different survey components. And the measure developer who submitted it meant to submit it to the Mental Health Project and accidentally submitted it to Child Health. So that was the main reason that we moved it over to that group. Were there any comments from the group about the measures that we deemed out of scope or the other measures submitted in general?
Can we assume that if it's not... Is the submission period closed? That is...
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Did you have a question as to whether we might receive more or?
Yeah, the guy was just wondering whether we should be doing any other efforts to get some more in. There were some I was hoping to come in that I don't see.
Okay. All righty. We are, okay, great. We can probably go ahead and get started with reviewing some of the measures. ARC was the measure developer, and I think they'll be joining us in just a few minutes on the call. And when they do, we can have them do a formal introduction of the measures just to spend a few minutes kind of describing them and their purpose and how they're used. The other thing is they have a representative from their work group team who will only be available until 2 o'clock. So if questions, you know, arise that the group can think of, we'll have to kind of figure out the best way to use his time until 2 o'clock to get any specific questions answered about the measures. Did anyone have any trouble accessing the survey or any issues around that and completing the measure evaluations? We received definitely some good feedback from about 14 to 15 of the committee members, so that was a very good turnout.
The only problem I had is when I got to the end, I didn't know I was at the end, and I hit next, and I couldn't go back.
Okay.
I was in somebody else's measures.
Okay.
And I just wanted to go back and review what I wrote and take, mm-hmm. and I couldn't go back.
Okay.
In fact, it just like disappeared. I thought it was in cyberspace. But.
Okay. Sorry about that. And actually, before we review the measures, I did want to take a few minutes to go through some of the evaluation criteria, just kind of a brief review of that quickly to provide some context for our discussion moving forward.
Okay. Go ahead. Hi, it's Reva again. As you recall, in our meeting in November, we went through this in a fair amount of detail, and so we don't want to belabor it. But just as a review prior to our discussion, just briefly want to talk about NQF's endorsement criteria. There are four main criteria around importance, scientific acceptability, usability, and feasibility. There are some upfront conditions that primarily NQF staff deals with, but just realize that the intended use of measures must include both public reporting and quality improvement. So keep that sort of perspective in mind as we go forward. The slide on evaluation criteria describes the hierarchy and the reason why each of those main criteria are important. And they do fall in a bit of a hierarchy. Important to measure and report is the most important. It is a threshold criteria, and it represents the extent to which the specific measure focus, the topic of the measure, is important to making significant gains in healthcare quality. So this is less about the details and the specifications of this measure, but the topic of which it addresses. The second criteria, scientific acceptability, focuses on this measure, these specifications. And it is the extent to which the measure produces consistent and credible results about the quality of care when implemented. So it's all about the science of this particular set of specifications. The next criteria of usability is the extent to which audiences, the intended audiences, can understand the results of the measure and are likely to find them useful for decision making. In other words, at the end of the day, when you have a result, what does it mean? And can people understand what it means? And then finally, it's feasibility, and this is the extent to which the required data are readily available, retrievable, the measure can be calculated without undue burden, and can be implemented for public reporting and quality improvement. In other words, usable for the use that NQF wants to see it used. So these are deliberately laid out in this order as a bit of a hierarchy, and importance is a threshold criteria. So the next one, it kind of talks about the process. The staff has gone through and looked at the conditions for consideration. You're going to be looking at the various measures and evaluate and voting on the first the threshold criteria of importance as well as the other criteria. Having the hard data of your votes on how you are evaluating this measure is helpful in informing audiences during the public comment period, during the voting period, and then ultimately when it goes to the CSAC and the board. So we do that hard data of how you evaluate the four major criteria is important. Then finally, it all comes down to your recommendation for endorsement. And your options, which you will be working with today as you review these four measures, are recommending this measure for endorsement. Does it meet the criteria sufficiently enough? Are its strengths overwhelm its weaknesses? Does it, have a valuable, best-in-class place in NQF's portfolio? Clearly, the opposite vote is to do not recommend. It doesn't meet criteria or it does not fit into the portfolio. There is the option to recommend with conditions, and this should be used very sparingly and very cautiously. And this is recommendations of the steering committee that only goes forward if certain changes are made to the measure. And measures that have well-developed, well-tested, are not amenable to lots and lots of changes on the fly. So we would, although it's an available option, we'd want to use it sparingly and carefully. So those are the sort of the action items that we're asking you to go through on the evaluation of measures. You'll have your opportunity to begin doing so today on the four measures that Nicole's going to lead you through. Okay? Do you want to talk about this? Any questions about the measure evaluation criteria? All right, if you anything comes up during the course of this call, feel free to ask.
The last thing I wanted to walk through quickly was just the timeline. Again, as I mentioned, our call for measures closed in February. Our in-person meeting is scheduled for May 5th and 6th of this year. Following that meeting, we're scheduled to go out for public and member comment in late June, which will then travel into July for a 30-day comment period. Our member voting period is set to happen in August to September of this year, and CSAC review and a board endorsement in October of this year. Are there any questions about the timeline? All right. I think it's safe to start reviewing our measures. Do we have anyone from ARC on the phone?
Yeah, hi. This is John Bott.
Hi, John. How are you?
Good.
Do you want to go ahead and introduce these four measures before the group discusses them?
Sure. Just really, really quickly, especially because Dr. Patrick Romano is just available until 2 p.m. today, so we want to be able to allow you to ask questions of him in that amount of time he's here for, and he needs to move on to another NQF commitment. So really, really quickly, and Patrick and I think Cheryl are on the call too, they can feel free to chime in. This is the measurement of four different pediatric conditions that present themselves in an inpatient event. And I'm sure you have the measures in front of you. So these measures reflect the coordination of care in the community and the quality of care in the community setting, although they're used by looking at inpatient events. So we see these as potentially preventable admissions, or some folks also call these ambulatory care sensitive conditions. You may know that a number of the adult versions of these ambulatory care sensitive conditions were endorsed by NQF, I think, a couple of years ago. So that's just a really high-level overview of these four pediatric measures. And I'm not sure if Patrick or Cheryl are on the call, and they could feel free to jump in with any additions to that. Well, they're either not on the call or they don't have additions.
Okay. So we had four reviewers for this measure. We had Charlie Homer. We have Nancy Fisher. We have Kathy Jenkins. And we have Faye Gary. So can someone from that group begin the discussion or provide their evaluation and review results?
I'm sure any of us could. This is Charlie. Who else is on the call from the group? Nancy?
I'm here.
Do either of you? Nancy, do you want to lead it through, or do you want me to?
Well, I would like you to, because my voice comes and goes.
Okay, sure. And I just wonder whether it'd be helpful to look at the survey data first, or to have us go through it, each one, because you have the survey data.
Sure.
That might be useful to sort of frame it.
Okay, absolutely. Well, for starters, we did have 6 committee members fill this out, so the numbers will be a little different looking at this measure compared to the others. For importance to measure and report, most of the measures ranked impact under complete. So just to provide a frame of reference, the ratings for each of the sub-criteria were either completely met, partially met, minimally met, not at all, or not applicable. So the first step in the criteria under the impact.
Can I clarify something?
Sure.
This is Dave Clark, and I filled out this one by mistake. So I actually went back and checked everything is not applicable.
Okay.
So you can throw it away.
Okay. And that's for this first measure?
Yes.
Okay. So most committee members agreed that the criteria was met completely for that. As far as addressing a gap, there was 6 people had said, yes, it completely addresses a gap, and 3 people said it partially addresses a gap. Relation to outcomes, most members who reviewed this agreed that it does relate to an outcome. 4 rated as partially. Those are a few of the comments, but I think it might be easier to have the individual reviewers kind of talk about some of their comments that they posed for importance.
Yeah, maybe I'll just, that's great. If you just even having it up there so people can quickly scan it, and mm-hmm. I'll give my 2 cents, and then Nancy, and if the others join the call, theirs as well. So I think in terms of impact, this is relatively prevalent. I mean, it said it was 9th most frequent, so it's up there, but also not top 1 or 2. So I think people felt, at least I felt, it was probably fairly important. I think the concern many of us had was, in this one in particular, was the clarity of the relationship between processes and outcomes. So this is an outcome measure. It's up there on a list of potentially preventable or ambulatory care sensitive. But at least for me and for others, I think there was some sense of, well, gee, do we really know what to be doing to be preventing hospitalization for UTIs? And I think the sense might be that if you have a sensitive a clinician who is has a high index of concern for children with fever and identifies UTIs early in the course and treats them on an ambulatory basis, that they might not get the more severe disease, which ends up in the hospital. But I think that was probably the area, certainly for me, of the greater concern. I think in support of there being some kind of a relationship between process and outcome here was that there is some level of, actually a fairly significant level of socioeconomic variation, poor kids being much more likely to be hospitalized than less poor kids. So that supports it being an issue related to access and quality. But I think that really was the main concern in this area. Nancy, do you want to add any other comments on that?
I agree with you. And the other thing I had is when you look at this, there's a big difference between hospitalization of younger children, say, 2 months of age versus a 17-year-old. And I think that sort of makes this a hard thing to report. And I don't think it's, when you look at it, is it really usable? Because, you know, some people might feel if they look at it, well, that's a good thing they put kids in the hospital. And somebody else says, no, we want this is preventable. But I don't think that we really have the benchmark when you group them all like this to say what is a good number. So there's a potential for quality improvement. I agree with you. I don't know how can you make the quality improvement if you don't know what the goal is that you're heading for. So I think that usability is a problem, too, when you do public reporting. I'm not sure what you would do with it.
Right, you want to move on to the next question?
Next section was scientific acceptability.
Oh, I'm sorry. I jumped ahead.
No, you're fine.
Yeah, I think you're on target there. You know, I think on this one, on the one hand, it's relatively straightforward in that it's like all the measures we're looking at today, that these are discharge data, so pretty easy to collect, not a whole lot of error in coding their hospitalization, so it specifications are clear, reliability I think is okay, although I guess there's not specific data. Nobody seems like the developers didn't present chart abstract data validating it, but I personally think that it's consistent with other kinds of administrative data. These are reasonably reliable. Looks like the rest of the committee had more concerns about that than I did. Whoops, I lost my webinar.
Yeah, so did I.
I lost mine too. This is
out. Okay. Sorry, I apologize. I'm trying to troubleshoot it.
I think we
can continue discussing it, and I'll pull this up as soon as I get a chance.
Yeah, that's fine. So I guess that, I mean, this next question really is related to the scientific characteristics of the data. It does look like overall there were some pretty widespread concerns about that by the rest of the committee, and I'm not entirely sure why, because I was fairly okay with the data quality on this one. Nancy, do you want to comment on this, and other people who maybe reviewed this also want to comment?
Are we the only two? I think that some of the concerns with that is that anytime that you do, I think this is chart extraction and you want to get the discharge data and stuff, that you have to have some kind of reliability on your chart abstractors. And so I think that people that have done this before, there has to, I mean, even though it seems straightforward, we're human and we make mistakes. And as a person who's gone out to do validity testing on something, working with other projects, I think that's why you see it all over the board.
I don't know if I guess we'll have the chance for the developers to comment on this, because they must have wrestled with this particular issue. So why don't we come back to it?
And then besides that, they said they hadn't done any reliability.
Right.
This is Faye Gary. I'd like to know if you can hear me.
Yes, that's great.
Well, I have not been, I've been trying to ask questions and to participate. I had to call in three times before I could get you to hear me, and now the operator is monitoring this to make sure I can participate. I apologize.
Not your fault. Thank you for trying three times.
Yes. Now, let me just return to our first part of the conversation, if you don't mind. I'm sorry to do this. But with that first measure, I had some concerns about the first measure. Number one, I think when we took this general measure, I don't think the way that we've structured it and discussed it will really target to the depth that we wish to children who live in environments that are not facilitating. I think poor children who live in environments where there is not the material facilities to support them There is not attention from parents when there are not materials, when there is low health literacy, poor health behaviors regarding the child and the homes. I don't think that first measure will address that population at all. I had a lot of trouble with it and with all of the measures, because if we look at the social determinants of health, these measures still address downstream issues and not upstream issues. That is, it does not address to any depth anything about health literacy or health education, or how is it that we would communicate to the general public. I think the measures are fine for other health professionals who are fairly sophisticated in hospital and clinic settings. But if you go to an urban or rural community where people are poor and struggling, I don't think these measures are going to help to get better outcomes as we wish. So just help me. I've been struggling with that.
Well, I don't want to necessarily, this is Charlie, and again, maybe I look to our NQF leaders whether we should go into discussion around these now, or whether you want to just have us review all the elements and hear from the committee members and then have a more general discussion.
I don't know. I just need to put the issue on the table, because that issue permeates a lot of the others in my mind's eye.
Yeah, so it sounds like more of a general issue with the measure. Maybe we could review the other criteria with this measure in particular and then come back to that that comment.
Or maybe we just need to schedule a time when we can talk about it with regard to all of the measures.
No, I think that's a great point. Absolutely.
Hello. I think we should address that today. Why don't we go through each of the criteria, hear from each of us who worked on the reviews, and then have a discussion across the whole committee on the call if we can within the time.
Yeah. Okay. And it looks like the webinar is back up. If you all have any further problems, just let me know.
Okay. Do you know how we get back on once we work?
You should be able to click on that same link that was provided. So while we're waiting for folks to pull that back up, we can move on to usability and feasibility, and we're still on the UTI measure.
Yep. Do you want to quickly say what the general...
Sure. So most of the committee members, 3 out of the 6, marked understandable as completely met. Most of the committee agreed that harmonization was partially met. And as far as added value, it kind of each person kind of marked either completely, partially, or minimally met for added value. And of course, there were several comments that followed with that as well.
My quick take on.
Nicole, I still can't get on. Are others getting on?
And who's this?
Marina.
Okay. I'll send you the link directly, Marina.
Can you send it to me too, Faye, Gary?
Sure.
In my quick sense on the feasibility here, again, is because this is sort of standard discharge data. It's certainly easy for people to do. Whether it's easy for people to understand, apropos of the earlier discussion, is another question.
Well, I skipped ahead and already said about the usability. And I think that there's a real problem with the usability, because it's covering such a spread of children. I mean, we all do pediatrics, and we know there's different benchmarks for different ages, and we do different things. It's not like adult medicine. and just measuring it. And so I don't think it might be understandable, you know, how many kids get hospitalized, but I don't think we know really what's good or what's bad with this measure the way it's written. So I don't think it's really usable.
You don't think, again, high being bad and low being good is good enough?
No, because, you know, if you look, people can't agree on who's supposed to go into the hospital, except when you talk about younger children. And so putting it up there and saying, maybe you know, if I knew this, I believe this is on how many kids per population. It doesn't tell me how many kids per UTI. So there might be people say, well, if you're under 30 days of age a month, you go into the hospital. So maybe high would be a good number compared to how many, you know, the kids that get UTI versus if you're 16, it's different. So I think it's very hard to say, okay, this is, a low number is good. It may not be good. Maybe you don't put anybody in the hospital in one area except the kids that are younger. Then that wouldn't be so bad. That's what I find a problem with that. And even, you know, and we can't agree on it.
Yep. Okay, good. Okay.
I agree with the previous one. I think the issue for me could center around basically the variables of socioeconomic status, which we know that in and of itself predicts so many different kinds of outcomes, but also the developmental issues. And when you talk about developmental issues and small children, we have to talk about the parents because they are the sole caregivers. And it's the extent to which they could make some kind of discerning judgment and understand, again, I'm back to the usability or the impact of this. When a child gets to the hospital, then we would hope and assume that professionals would know what to do to some degree. But even then, when we consider the child's culture, the child's socioeconomic background, the parenting, I don't know where this will take us except outcomes. And we already know that outcomes are pretty disparate when we look across some ethnic racial groups and some socioeconomic groups. We know that. So the question for me is, what are we trying to impact? Excuse me.
Charlie, maybe you know, but the way I understand it, this measure's been around for a long time. And while there is an opportunity for improvement, has improvement been made just measuring it at this large, you know, a spectrum? I mean, you know, it's like I said, if I had it for like 0 to, say, 3 months or something, that would give me, I would want probably a higher number for somebody with hospital than for older. So it's been around, but has anybody been able to make an improvement on it? And maybe we haven't been able to do it because we don't have the goal or the standard of which we're trying to measure.
I mean, so my take is, first of all, that this UTI measure is a problem because the relationship between either clinical quality, that is what the clinician does, or even system performance, the relationship, having a good relationship with your primary care provider and your primary care provider having good relationship in the hospital, all that stuff. In general, UTI is probably not the best test case for that.
Yeah.
But in general, you know, so I don't want to speak strongly in favor of this particular component for that reason, because I think the clinical basis around UTI is less clear.
Yeah.
I think when it comes to the other topics that we're talking, some of the other topics that we're talking about today, I think in general the concept of the preventable hospitalization or ambulatory care sensitive hospitalization is still a very useful integrative measure.
as a quote outcome measure in child health, because A, it's pretty hard to come up with other outcome measures, mm-hmm. and B, I do think they are particularly, I mean, we'll talk about it when you look at things like asthma or gastroenteritis, where there actually is maybe a more solid clinical base for it. I think they have been used to target where do you build infrastructure, where do you need better primary care providers, where do you need earlier identification of problems and things like that. I think the challenge I have with this particular measure is, again, the weakness in its clinical basis. That there is, I mean, there, you know, to me that there is socioeconomic variation here, that is that poor people are more likely, all things being equal, to be, more likely to be hospitalized. I mean, that to me is actually the strongest argument in favor of this measure, just because it could focus people. But having said that, I'm not speaking strongly in its favor by any stretch.
No, but I mean, but you know, even if you say, you know, poor people are likely to be hospitalized, and then you say, well, it's better if the number's lower, the question is, though, if you lower that number and say that's good, then the poor people don't get hospitalized, and so you're not really improving their outcomes. And I think that this said that if they felt that if it was an indication if you were poor that you didn't have access to primary care, and I'm not sure that's the only reason. We talk about these things, and, you know, clinics run on certain hours, and you and I have, in our jobs we have flexibility. So when I had to stop work and go and take my son to the hospital, I could do that. But some people can't. They have two jobs. They can't do that. And I don't think it's so much that they don't have access to primary care. It's just that there are other circumstances, you know, that when you're poor, you just can't do something. And Canada's got a study. They've got open access to prenatal care. But who doesn't get the prenatal care? People that are in poverty. So we can't fix that big variable by measuring this. And I think we could.
I agree with both of you all. And I think in this day and time, I think it's one thing to know that poor people have poor outcomes and poor children have poor outcomes with regard to urinary tract infections. But if we're going to look at a measure to try to make an impact, my question is, how does this change anything? It's more than money. It's also understanding what needs to be done, a sense of urgency, how to use the healthcare system. The Institute of Medicine always talks about three variables. It talks about the healthcare system, the healthcare provider, and the patient. And so I think all three of those systems interdigitate with regard to this and the other measures. But so something does not come together for me in terms of how in the long term will these measures make a difference and improving the well-being of children and reducing mortality and morbidity. That's what keeps running through my head. And if we're going to have these as outcome measures, I think we should consider all of the social, or at least the major social determinants of health. One is being poor, but the other might be not having the knowledge. The other one might be the environment within which a person lives. If you're on a reservation or in the middle of Wyoming, it'll take you a day to get to a healthcare facility. And at night, all of the emergency rooms are closed anyway. So it's not coming together for me.
This is Ellen Schwellenstecker, and for me, the question is, what level is the measure being used? So I personally would be very uncomfortable with any of these measures as a measure of, say, the quality of an ambulatory pediatrician, because, well, the pediatrician can impact the outcome, so can a lot of other factors, which many people have spoken to already. But if it were a measure more of the community health, I could see it. So if you had a higher level, you know, maybe the community as a whole needs to look at the kinds of systems it has available to people in order to access the system for appropriate care. So to me, that's the biggest question hanging is, at what level will it be used?
This is Cheryl Davies. I'm one of the measure development team. Would it be possible to jump in and answer that question?
I think it would be great. So go ahead.
Okay. So the measure as we are using it right now is an area level measure. And the idea behind potentially preventable hospitalizations, as has been mentioned, is that it's a measure of access to high quality outpatient care. Now that access, address some of the earlier comments, can have a wide variety of definitions. We certainly are aware that despite having a primary care provider, that individuals in the low SES categories often have higher rates of hospitalizations, and this certainly holds true for pediatrics. There's a theory out there, and I'm going to put forward as a theory rather than anything that's been shown, but that if physiologically there is no difference in the severity of illness, that perhaps we should be looking at a public health standpoint about addressing some of these barriers to care. So perhaps there may be issues with being able to get to a clinic appointment in the middle of the day. Well, then maybe for the poor populations, the right way to address that barrier would be to have expanded clinic hours. Better patient education, culturally competent patient education. Now, I'm not going to pretend that these aren't lofty goals. These are things these are certainly difficult things to address. That's the theory behind some of these measures. Now, whether or not these are applied to individual clinicians' quality of care, no, not at this time. We've recently conducted a study looking at doing that, but these measures aren't there, and that certainly would involve quite a bit of risk adjustment and really understanding the impact of an individual clinician on some of these wider access to care issues.
This is Patrick Romano. Can people hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, so if just to add slightly to that point, I'm the pediatrician on the team from ARC. So it is precisely the intent of these measures that they be used by public health agencies at the local level, as well as organizations, community advocacy organizations, and others, to understand what's going on in terms of how the healthcare system is operating at the county level, at the city, metropolitan area level. So it is precisely the purpose of these indicators that they are sensitive to the kind of socioeconomic determinants that they've been discussed. They're designed to raise questions. They're designed to identify potential problems so that people can hopefully work together and help identify solutions. So in some areas, those solutions may involve improving geographic access to care, improving linguistic access, reducing barriers, addressing cultural barriers. In some areas, it may simply be getting more primary care physicians. In other areas, it may be re-educating emergency department physicians. So there are a wide variety of different potential influence points. But it is the purpose of these indicators simply to identify communities that have an excessive burden related to these potentially preventable hospitalizations. And to address one of the earlier comments as well, the children under the age of 3 months are excluded from the denominator for the indicator. So the indicator focuses on the 3-month to 17-year age group, and it is age-adjusted. So if there are differences in the age profile of different communities, that would be reflected as the indicator is reported. Also, to address another point, this is about hospitalizations, not about emergency department visits. At least in theory, it shouldn't be sensitive to whether a person feels the need to seek care in the emergency department as opposed to a primary care physician's office.
May I just interrupt to say that given all of the other factors that you've just mentioned, limited access to care, transportation, limited health literacy, we also know that poor people utilize the emergency room as clinics. That's a lot of national data to support that. So even though ideally, or in our mind's eye, we think the person should be going to a clinic or to a primary care physician, but they many times take their children to emergency departments. So I think we do have to consider the behaviors of the individuals that we wish to impact and to try to address it from that level as well.
Well, of course, but my point is just that the indicator is not looking at emergency department visits. It's focused on hospitalizations, and there are specific clinical criteria which have been put forward by the American Academy of Pediatrics and others for what the clinical criteria should be for hospitalizing these children with urinary tract infections. So,
do you also track if they come through the emergency room, their source of admission?
That information is available in the data, but it doesn't affect the construction of the indicator, because whether the patient is seen in the primary care physician's office or in the emergency department, the same criteria for hospitalization apply. And the notion is that if we have an effective primary health care system which treats patients when they need to be treated, then the urinary tract infections can be treated effectively with oral medication such that intravenous therapy is not required and therefore hospitalization is not required.
Patrick, this is Lee Partridge. Before another member of the committee, before we lose you, could I just ask you to clarify your statement about the data being age-adjusted? One of my difficulties with this measure in general is I know you exclude the children under 3 months, but I'm not sure that that helps me very much because it seems to me that children at least under the age of one or possibly two would be a very different situation from the teenager presenting with a UTI. So what are you saying? You slice the data until you could report by different age cohorts?
Well, the basic construction of the indicator is simply adjusted for differences in the age, the distribution of age in different comparison populations. So if, for example, one community happened to have more infants than another community, that would be reflected in the risk-adjusted rate of the indicator. But I think that you raise an important point, which is that stratification may be another approach, and it's an approach that's available, but it's not part of the inherent design of the indicator. And stratification would allow users to focus on particular age groups and see whether, for example, disparities across communities are consistent across age groups or are they limited to a particular age group.
The indicator is not required to be stratified, but age stratification is available in the software.
This is Alan Lieberthal. Peter, one of the things you said was that the AAP has guidelines with regard to criteria for hospitalization. However, physicians are notorious for not following guidelines, and there have been many studies to show that. So you can't depend on that to give you clean data. The physician, whether in the office or in the ED, decided to admit has virtually no relationship to the published guidelines.
If I could
this ask, measure's not measuring whether you follow the guidelines or not either, so I agree with you.
It's an outcome measure. I have a Charlie here for my ARC colleagues, a specific question about this measure in particular. Well, two questions. One is about the construct of the ambulatory care sensitive or preventable hospitalizations. When you calculate that, what are the issues if we are more or less supportive of different ones of these four items? Does that influence? So, again, to show my bias is I think your asthma and your gastroenteritis measures pretty credible, and I'm having a little hard time with the UTI and the diabetes one. So will that influence, is that an issue for you? Because I know there are, you also are different, certainly public health entities construct this overall preventable hospitalization index.
This is Patrick Romano. The indicators are designed as individual freestanding indicators, so I think the committee should evaluate them in that way. There is a composite that we've also developed that includes all four together, but that composite is not under specific discussion here today.
This is Alan Lieberthal. Charlie, I do not share your optimism. I think we're going to have the same discussion when it comes to asthma.
But we might. At least. And then I just have one specific UTI question, which is, have you looked at, and again, this may be a coding issue, but have you looked at, for example, hospitalization for the more severe diseases, so, you know, pyelonephritis, et cetera, and excluded or looked at ratios between that and hospitalization for cystitis, which presumably doesn't, you know, it's really presumably upper tract disease that you really, and systemic disease that you're more interested in addressing. Has that been explored as you were doing your measurement development, or has it always been just everything clumped together?
Cheryl, do you want to address that first?
I don't have the data right in front of me as to how many of these were cystitis versus more advanced infections. So I need to get back in the next couple of days with that.
Yeah, I would say that we did some exploratory work looking at the individual components, but this definition was really inherited from other researchers.
Sure.
who did work before us in this field, including John Billings and others. And I think the underlying rationale is that even if it's a lower tract infection, it's reasonable to ask the question, why did the child require hospitalization? And could that hospitalization have been prevented? From the efficiency standpoint, it's the lower tract infections that would be even more worrisome than the upper tract infections. So I think you could make an argument either way for a narrower or more expansive definition, but this is what has been attested by a number of researchers over the last 15 years.
Yep, I appreciate that. Thank you. Well, I think it's been very worthwhile going into the details on this because many of the issues that were raised are going to apply to the other three, and it's also our committee's first chance to have a conversation. Are there other questions from committee members about this measure?
I just wanted to ask, would it be reasonable to think that if these kinds of data were collected in hospitals, which I'm sure they are, but some uniform method of collecting, coding, and interpreting the data over time, and then something be done with the data, such as targeting specifically those vulnerable children who have urinary tract infections frequently, or families where children have urinary tract infections, et cetera, et cetera. Because I'm trying to, again, deal with the issue of impact or significance, And I think it could serve a tremendous utility if we could conceptualize long-term how these data could be used at specific hospitals and clinics to make a difference in the population, populations, where we know that there are severe health disparities.
It's Charlie here. I mean, these measures, and again, I'm not necessarily speaking for this UTI measure, but in the aggregate, as Patrick said, these measures have been used broadly, including in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, where I live, you know, to target, to do public health planning, to target where you build your clinics, to do targeted outreach around specific interventions. So I do think, well, I'm not disagreeing with some of our concerns about this specific one and even the concept overall. I do think this construct has been widely used in health planning and in targeting disparities in particular.
This is Donna Prasad in Dallas. Can you all hear me?
Yep.
I'm now thinking about whether we did the right thing. But in Dallas, my community clinics, this was one of the measures that was used. UTI, pneumonia, and asthma are measures that are used from and pulled from all the hospitals to help us target populations. I would admit that I never gave the UTI much thought, and I think with UTI, lower UTI, I think the problem that I'm thinking about right now is not only is that early age group one where there's variable in clinical practice, and I think we're unclear in the literature about exactly what to do. I do think that if we exclude that group, we will exclude disparity as well, and I'm not sure how we reconcile that.
Good point. Thank you. So turning to the NQF team, do we call a vote on this item at this point to recommend or not recommend?
We'll be getting the votes via SurveyMonkey.
Okay.
So I'll be sending out another survey in a few days by the end of this week to the group to actually vote on the measure. We can kind of get a general consensus if you'd like. I'm also a little concerned with time.
Right.
Because we do have the other few measures to review. So I think it'd probably be best to just move on to the next measure, if that's okay with the group.
Sure.
The next measure is Measure 55. It's gastroenteritis admission rates. Description is admission rate for gastroenteritis in children aged 3 months to 17 years per 100,000 of population, and that's the area level rate. The two reviewers who I think are present on the call are Ellen Schwallenstocker and Bonnie Zima.
David Clark is here also.
I'm sorry, who is that?
David Clark.
Oh, okay, great. Do either of you want to start off the discussion on this particular measure?
This is Ellen. I'd be glad to, although I just... I agree with Charlie that this may be more maybe than UTI, that for me, some of the same issues remain. And this is solely my opinion, but I would be very supportive of this measure for the purposes of public health kind of planning. I would not be supportive of it if it were used or used inappropriately as a measure of the quality of ambulatory care provided. Holding, say, individual clinics or physicians accountable for it. And in some places, I think in the specifications there were statements like, you know, this is a proxy for quality of ambulatory care. And I think that the issues around access are equally likely to impact the measure itself. So I would, like I said, not be comfortable with it as a measure, you know, to hold specific providers accountable, but would be supportive of it as a public.
I think, this is Faye Gary, I think I have some of the same general kinds of issues. So the way I'm thinking is that maybe a one way to address some of these concerns is to have a preamble that would precede this document that we have in front of us. And then the preamble, we could lay out some of these concerns about the social determinants of health and the basic variables that interact in that kind of framework. And also the other is the issue of cultural competence, where we also, if we just want to thicken the plot, we know that there are some populations that are not adequately represented in the workforce. And if you look at some of the data that's coming out from the government to include the Office of Minority Health, where they have the CLAP standards, I'm wondering, do we want to refer to any of those? Because if you look at one of them, I think 13 of those standards, of the 18 standards, address the issue of communication. And if we have issues with communication where the healthcare provider can't communicate with the person because his or her background is a different culture, a different language, et cetera, or it could be vice versa. It could be the patient who has a different language, a different culture, a different meaning about health, illness, pain, infection, et cetera. So I'm just trying to think how we can reconcile some of these differences that I feel myself as I read through this document when we consider such a diverse population of people that we have to care for. So I'm just thinking that maybe a nice preamble to lay out some of these issues might help, and then we could follow with some of these specifics. But just as it is now, I have an abiding concern about what impact or what difference it would make with regard to how we go forward. We want to make sure that whatever we do gets a different outcome, hopefully a better outcome, with regard to mortality and morbidity among people who bear the greatest burden of these illnesses. And that's the part that I don't see would make any difference in these guidelines. And I hope I'm wrong, and I stand to be corrected.
We could have the primary reviewers also comment, so I think that would be Bonnie and David would be great.
Well, I think that certainly the impact of this measurement is potentially great just because of the extreme frequency of the illness. I, too, have a concern about the relationship to outcome, although I think with this measure that was better addressed than it was for UTI, and there has been at least some testing and and some reason to believe that efficient outpatient therapy is going to affect the rate of hospital admission. It seems to me that one of the biggest issues is the availability of sort of short stay emergency 23-hour or whatever facilities are available to rehydrate a child with a moderate degree of gastroenteritis without admitting them to a hospital. I know that there are many in smaller communities and many small hospitals that do not have these types of facilities, which results in any child who needs an IV, even if it's only for a few hours, will get admitted. And to me, that's a bigger flaw than some of the other issues.
Well, I think one issue interacts with the other.
Yes, clearly.
Is Bonnie Zima on the line? Okay. Were there further comments from other committee members about the measure?
This is Donna Prasad from Dallas. One thing I noted in the document here is there is now the rotavirus vaccine, and I think maybe one thing.
Hi, this is Bonnie Zimmer.
Hi.
I'm sorry, the operator unmuted my line.
Okay.
Did you need me to comment, or?
We were opening up for comments from you since you were a primary viewer. Sorry to cut you off, Donna.
Go ahead.
I wanted to echo David. I thought it was an important indicator. I thought the main weakness was that the validity was only based on face validity, and that the other thing was, again, the risk adjustment was only based on socios and not really other clinical factors. And I thought that the developer of the measure actually raised some good points, and one was, which David was noting, is that it could be impacted by hydration protocols in the ER. And the other thing was the addition of the rotavirus. And so I think those were two issues that I think if this outcome was accepted, I think that people should be encouraged to somehow build in some type of pilot to see what impact those two factors would have on this measure.
But Charlie here, with the rotavirus there, again, wouldn't that, if anything, accentuate the value of this measure? That is, presumably hospitalizations will go down in places that have higher rates of rotavirus immunization, which, again, would indicate higher level of quality of care within the community, access to...
Yes.
Yeah, that was going to be the point I was going to make, that
yes.
It's hopeful to... Now that we have the rotavirus vaccine, what this could do for us is give us an indication of the extent to which we immunize effectively.
Yes, and so I'm not sure what the mechanism would be, but I think some type of encouragement that would be the next stage in developing this measure would be, I think, be positive.
And in terms of prevention, for the reviewer, question to the reviewers, and this wasn't emphasized in the literature, but my sense, maybe it was from international studies, is that oral rehydration is pretty darn effective, and that communities where there's clinicians are sensitive to dehydration and communicate well with their families, and families have access to various flavors and oral rehydration solution, are less likely to progress to the point where they need IV therapy, either in an emergency department, short stay unit, or a hospitalization.
This is Patrick Romano. Would this be an appropriate time for me to say something?
Sure.
I think these are excellent points, and I just want to make it very clear from ARC's perspective that all of these measures, and this measure in particular, are really viewed as screening measures focused on population health. So you might think of them in the same way as looking at infant mortality rates, for example. They're simply a tool for public health agencies and community advocates to use to understand where there's a disproportionate burden of morbidity in the community, and then to consider potential ways of addressing that problem. And I think all of the things that have been suggested, including more universal use of hydration protocols in the ED, better education of primary care physicians and families about oral rehydration, better use of rotavirus vaccination, parental education about appropriate access to primary care, availability of short stay type of facilities. These are all tools to reduce hospitalizations from gastroenteritis. And I think the point here really is that a hospitalization is, in most cases, an undesirable event for a healthy child. And so if we can prevent hospitalizations by having these kinds of protocols or systems in place, that's generally desirable. And the purpose of the indicator is really to focus people's attention on those kinds of opportunities to improve the accessibility and quality of primary health services in the community.
Well, thank you. Are there any other further comments from the group? If not, we will move on to the next measure. Any further comments?
This is Ellen. Could I just ask Patrick one kind of technical question, and that is, who usually calculates these measures? Because the one question I had would be, I think somewhere in the specification it calls for using the zip code as a way of calculating the population. So is it the hospital that does that? Is it the health department that does that? I'm just curious.
No, let me be very clear about that. An individual hospital would not be able to calculate these measures because these measures require a defined population. And the way that's currently operationalized is it's a geographically defined population. So it would have to be calculated by somebody who has access to the all payer data from a geographic area. It could be a zip code. It could be a county. It's really designed to operationalize at the county or state level principally. So it's largely state health departments and county health departments and organizations with that perspective that would be estimating the indicators using data that are collected by the state governments, these all-payer databases.
Yeah, and this is John Bott from ARC, and examples of entities doing such a measurement in this particular measure is in the usability section.
Thanks. That's very helpful.
Okay. We're going to move on to the next measure. Measure 56, which is diabetes short-term complication rate. And that's the admission rate for diabetes short-term complications in children 6 to 17 per 100,000 population. The reviewers for this measure, I think these are the reviewers who should be on the call. Sharon Daughtry, Jane Perkins, and Philip Cabort. If we have someone from that group, group three, if they could lead us off on the discussion for this measure.
This is Gotham Rao. Can you hear me?
Oh, yes.
Oh, great. Okay, finally. I had a hard time getting on, so
sorry.
Yeah, I think I'm part of that group as well.
Yes, you are. Do you want to go ahead and...
Sure. I can just start off. I mean, I think it's a bit of a different measure in the sense that there's very little a child or anyone can do to prevent UTIs or gastroenteritis, I mean, apart from the rotavirus. But this one, I think, is much, much more patient-dependent. And it's interesting, even in the evidence statement that they have there, that they point out that an increased rate of visits doesn't seem to influence the rate of diabetic admissions. So that's one of the considerations, I think. So how much impact improving the quality of care can have on the measure is something I'm not too clear about. Again, I think from a public health standpoint, it might be something interesting. So there's that aspect of it. The other concern I had about the measure was that they've defined diabetic complications fairly precisely, but I think in many cases a child might be admitted with type 1 diabetes where the actual complication diagnostic code is not coded. Even though they may have had, you know, an adjustment of insulin, they may have even had diabetic ketoacidosis. We just don't know based on the discharge diagnosis. So some of those considerations about the numerator, I think, are things I'm concerned about. And I think I'll just stop there and see if anyone else had a chance to look at it.
Well, this is Sharon Daugherty, and I actually was out of town all last week, so I really just got a chance to look at this measure this morning. And I felt that it does have the potential to have a huge impact in that the ability to educate families about potential complications could have an impact on these complication rates. I had a similar concern of Gautam in the how they defined complications, and I think that this measure was originally designed to be an adult measure, and so therefore probably the majority of the complications they're looking at are more type 2 type complications versus the more frequent, historically more frequent type 1 in children.
I had, this is Dave Clark, I had one concern about this, and I just don't know the answer because I'm not enough of an endocrinologist to know. I was wondering whether the impact of first-time admissions, in other words, undiagnosed diabetes, is going to have a significant contaminating effect on this measure. I know that young children up 0 to 5 are excluded, but is that enough to minimize the contamination of undiagnosed diabetes?
This is Gautam Rao. I think that is, I think there are a significant number of children that are diagnosed with diabetes at age 6 and up, especially type 2 diabetes is mostly adolescents. So.
Yes.
Yeah. And that was one of my concerns in the sense that some of those children may be discharged simply with a diagnosis of diabetes rather than complications, even though they actually presented with complications when they were admitted.
Right, but if you're just looking at complications of diabetes and you're relating that outcome to the outpatient care of diabetes, it would seem to me that one of the inclusion criteria should be previously diagnosed diabetes.
Yes, uh-huh, I agree.
Got it.
Are there any further comments from other committee members on this measure?
This is Lee again. I just wanted to, I'm sorry, I'm walking around the room because I'm here with the staff at NQF. We can, am I right, Reva? We can recommend that a measure be endorsed if modified. And I wonder if this is one where perhaps the modification that, was it Dr. Clark who said perhaps we should exclude the undiagnosed, you know, the child who's admitted undiagnosed with diabetes is discharged with the diabetes discharge, but that admission was perfectly appropriate to determine that was the problem. Can we recommend, how would the ARC folks react to a recommendation like that?
Probably hard.
Can I comment on that? I mean, I think these are meant to be population measures. If you look at, if you're talking about changing the denominator simply to children with diabetes and looking at how often each of them are admitted, I think that's a totally different denominator.
I think I'm talking about modifying the numerator.
I think it's very hard to, because this is usually picked up from cross-sectional, you know, hospital discharge data. I would think technically it'd be challenging because I don't think there's a separate code for new diagnosis of diabetes versus diabetes. So since it's just discharge data, anonymized discharge data, that'd be very hard to figure out.
So if I'm a consumer advocate in this community, would it be reasonable for me, therefore, to be saying we should be driving to zero if the data's that dirty?
Well, I would actually argue most kids, well, I don't know. I mean, there are certainly many places that pride themselves on trying not to hospitalize even an initial diagnosis. I mean, it's obviously different if a child presents in DKA, but, you know, many excellent programs try for the older kids to do an outpatient assessment. So, I don't know. I mean, my concern on this was that the management issues in young adults, in teens and school-age kids, are less, the science is less clear than it is for managing older people, as to the level of tightness, for example, and control and trade-off between over hypoglycemia and young children.
Yes, and I would think unless you have a risk adjustment for this at certain centers, it might bias those centers that see the sicker kids more frequently.
But it's done on a community and it's done on a, it's not based on the place they're hospitalized, I don't think. I think it's based on the place they live.
Okay. Yeah, correct. Again, it's an area-level measure.
Okay.
But measuring a state or a county, et cetera.
Okay. Any further comments? Okay, we are going to move on to the next measure, which is measure 57, the asthma admission rate. And the description is the admission rate for asthma in children ages 2 to 17 per 100,000 population. Our reviewers were Marina Weiss, Alan Lieberthal, Lee Partridge, and Donna Prasad. Sorry.
This is Alan Lieberthal, and I had a number of issues with this measure. Now, like diabetes, it's a chronic disease, unlike gastro and UTI. However, much of the discussion that related to UTI and the socioeconomics and criteria for admission apply here as well. Going on to other points is that in asthma, hospitalization is a very crude measure of our quality of care for asthma. Much more, given all of the problems of socioeconomic groups and our healthcare system that encourages the uses of the emergency department as a primary care facility, use of the emergency room reflects much more accurately degree of asthma control. There are so many variables in a doctor's office and an emergency department that may lead to hospitalization or may not lead to hospitalization, such as how long the patient can stay in one of those locations and how aggressive the physician or ED is going to be in the initial management. I think there are also some severe cultural biases and inappropriate assumptions made, or appropriate and inappropriate, as to ability to follow up based on socioeconomic level. Another problem is the definition of 2 years and up. Asthma under 5 years of age is a very complex problem and not a simple diagnosis, because more often than not, it is associated with another illness, infectious illness. So the primary diagnosis may be pneumonia, or it may be asthma for the same exact clinical presentation and patient. Over 5 years, the diagnosis is much more homogeneous and related more to allergy than to infection. So I think that what this measure does is gives a very gross snapshot point in time, and over many years you can look back and say, well, our hospitalization rate has may have improved, and for the life of me, I can't figure out why, because there are so many factors involved. So I just think it's for a population, and it's nice to look at, but as far as improving quality, I don't think it's a good measure.
This is Donna Prasad. I was one of the reviewers, and I share that idea somewhat. I
when I looked at this, I thought, well, this is the acceptable asthma outcome that we usually use, even in ambulatory, over certain populations that we manage, and the frustration is only that we're not clear what to do to make it better. And in the literature review on this, they say so, that it isn't, while asthma hospitalizations are related to disparity and lack of care, et cetera, it's not clear what exact process quality measures help make this outcome better. I think it's an unavoidable measure, and that we exclude the under 2-year-old, I think, helps. My concern with excluding all kids under 5 is that I do think the 2 to 5-year-old, there's a significant enough group that does have allergy issues that are amenable to better ambulatory care that I would not want them to get excluded from this measure.
This was another one of the reviewers. This was the only one of these measures that I really liked, that I felt quite comfortable with. I liked it because there were really big gaps in the data, as we've seen, and there are big spreads and disparity, with the lowest income group obviously being our worst. I also know that it's one of the areas in which there has been a lot of work done in a variety of communities to try to improve outpatient care. And I think it might be helpful before we head to vote. We don't really have time, but it would be if we can get to one of the states like New York that's had a major asthma initiative, or North Carolina, which has worked very hard on improving their outpatient care for their lowest income population children on asthma, to see if their population data might look as bad as some of the numbers that we've got here before us. I don't know, Nicole, can we put in a call, or do we have anybody we could talk to in North Carolina? If we could try in the next couple of days. Mm-hmm. It ties in so well with other work that's going on.
Mm-hmm. And Charlie here, just building on that, I do think that if you recall our conversation at our meeting, and generally the field, if you look at what NQF is doing with their national priority partnership, trying to develop broader measures of the health of a population. And I think if you were to look at this one in particular and the importance of asthma for kids' health and its role as most common medical cause for hospitalization, seems to me that this one does fit many of the criteria that we'd want.
This is Alan again, but is hospitalization the best outcome measure of asthma care, which was one of the criteria?
Well, the best readily available measure on a population basis. Are there others that you would?
I would say ED usage is much more sensitive, and would show some of the same economic variables and point out populations where much more work and much more much better services need to be provided, but yet it's a much more sensitive measure of asthma control that's readily obtainable.
Not as readily obtainable, but... Well,
I mean, much better controls of asthma outcome relate to school attendance, structured questionnaires of asthma control, such as the asthma control test, but that data would be almost impossible to gather on a large-scale basis.
What's the issue with not being able to get it from the EDs? Is it a DRG issue?
my understanding is the systems have not, I could be a little out of date, be interested in hearing from ARC. In pretty much every state, hospitals are mandated to report hospital discharge data, and the same kind of uniform criteria don't exist for EDs, I don't think, but I might
be. This is John Bott with ARC. If our reflection of our HCUP data is a reflection of what's going on in the world, I think we have ED data for about 12 to 15 states now, and that was just launched in the last 6 to 9 months. And participating in the inpatient hospital data set, we have, I believe, now 42 states. So inpatient data, and I think in general, is much more available than ED data currently.
Are there any further comments from either the reviewers of this measure or some of the other committee members? Okay. So following this discussion, what we're going to do on our end at NQF is to obviously capture the discussion that happened over the four measures and send that information to you, along with a link to a survey in which you will vote on each of the main criteria. So that would be importance, scientific acceptability, usability, and feasibility, and then also provide your overall vote for the measure. If there are any discrepancies with the voting, or if we find that there are some issues that we need to present to the group to discuss further, we can do that at the in-person meeting in May. There will also be a spot to provide comments if you all have further comments about the measure related to your voting. So those are the immediate next steps. In addition, as we prepare for the in-person meeting, I will also be circulating more materials where you will have a few more measures to evaluate and review. So that's another thing just to keep your eye out for as well. I wanted to, while we have a good amount of time left, about 15 minutes, I did want to open it up for any public comments if we had anyone call in who was not a part of the steering committee. Moderator, you can now open the lines for any comments.
All lines are open.
Did we have any comments from audience or persons listening into the call today?
This is Al Lieberthal. I think looking at these four measures, as well as just scanning the others that were submitted, points out how difficult it is to use outcome measures for quality improvement at a health plan or individual physician level, and that process measures are really going to be the key to actual steps to improvement. And then hopefully those process measures will cause change that will ultimately affect these rather insensitive population measures.
Thank you for those comments, Alan.
Any, can I ask a question?
Sure.
Can we get a summary of what the committee said on each measure?
Yes.
Because I'd like to think about that before I vote.
Sure.
Okay.
Yes, and you will also have a copy of the recording as well.
Thank you.
Apropos of Alan's comment, again, I'm sure this topic has been raised at NQF's senior levels on their other outcomes groups, and if they've had further thinking about that or any documents around how they're thinking about outcome measures, how the committee, that might inform the committee's deliberations when we meet. That would be helpful.
Charlie, this is Reva. Just a couple of comments on that.
I think that there is an evolutionary process ongoing, and it may be farther along in some other areas, not necessarily as much in the child health arena, but certainly in other areas, we're actually seeing people come back and say, you know, I can put all the time and effort into the process measures and do right, and yet the outcomes don't change. Rather than micromanage my approach to the patient care through telling me what processes, let's just look at the outcomes, and we'll figure out what to do with the processes to make it better. So I think you're seeing, to a greater or lesser degree, depending on the topic area, move in that direction where even the lots of providers are looking at outcomes as perhaps the next step approach to looking at measures that will be ultimately useful for driving improvement. Certainly, you're hearing outcomes are some of the important measures that payers, both public and private, are looking at, because that's essentially what it's all about. It's what patients care about. It's what providers should care about. It's what payers care about. It's really what everybody cares about, is the what happened aspect of it. So I will look and see if we've got something in the realm of documentation. But in terms of the discussions, and you're right, there are lots of them going on, especially in this project, but certainly in others, we are seeing this sort of evolution of thinking towards greater embracing of outcome measures.
Thank you.
Charlie, I just wanted to ask just a quick question, and that is, were there any measures submitted that were not included in the packet that we have?
No.
Well,
there were measures other than the four that we just reviewed. We reviewed those at the start of the call. What are there, about 25 of them?
No, yeah, I mean specific indicators for these four measures that for some reason were not included. Another way to ask the question is, do you automatically include all of the information that is submitted?
Yes. So all of the information that is submitted by the measure developer related to the four measures we reviewed today was provided to the committee.
Thank you.
Charlie, this is Kathy Jenkins. I have a question related to some of this prior conversation. How in the process how do we vote for a measure that, for example, is being proposed as a population-based measure and that one might, you know, believe has validity as a population-based measure, but for a variety of reasons, one feels is really not at all valid at a much lower granular level, such as a provider level. Is that something that we vote for in this process and can limit our vote to certain usages, or is that something we don't vote for because, for example, it wouldn't be appropriate in our minds to use it for pay-for-performance at the provider level? How does that work?
This is Reva. I mean, one of the specifications of these measures is that they are population and meant to be population. Certainly when it's in the report, we can include that. But I think by their very nature, they aren't something that are readily generated at the provider level, as ARC indicated. So,
you mean at the population level?
No, they are at the population level.
Right. I'm sorry. Could you answer my question again then? So you're saying that if it's being proposed as a four-population measure, that we're voting yes for that specific use, not for other broader uses?
Correct.
And how is that inherent in this process that it wouldn't, let's say, after a vote yes, get expanded, or how does it just get limited?
Well, the thing
is,
a couple of things. One, your denominator is per 100,000 population. That's not a denominator that's readily applicable to provider, services. So that's one. It would be difficult to do. We can certainly and will include in your recommendations that these are recommended as population-level measures, and that would be their intended use by geographic county, state kind of organizations.
Okay.
And that would be the way of conveying it.
And so when we vote, it's from that perspective?
Yes.
Good. That was a great question, Kathy. Thank you.
Any further questions from the group or any comments from the co-chairs? Charlie or Marina, any final comments or additional questions?
None from me. I just think it was a very helpful call and look forward to the supplemental material.
This is Faye Gary. I enjoyed the conversation and acknowledge that an awful lot of work has gone into producing this document, and I wish to thank you for that effort.
Yeah, I also thought it was a great conversation. And again, I think having sat on a committee that reviewed these ARC measures before, they're hard for people who are steeped in the clinical quality to wrestle with. So I suspect we will, I'm not sure the other conversations we get face-to-face will be easier because they're also going to be outcome measures, but but they'll be different. So thank you to the committee and to the staff. That was great. So we'll hear from staff. You'll send us a voting document with instructions on how to do it. You'll also be sending us the results of the survey so that we can use that to inform our conversations.
Yes.
Great.
And I'll be sending that this week, and then following the next week or so after that is when I'll be sending out the materials for the in-person meeting.
And will we review then our votes? How will that conversation then? Is it simple majority? Are we going to review it at the face-to-face meeting where we'll have further discussion? Have you thought that through?
The voting for the measures is usually a simple majority. Based on the discussions from these measures, it seems like there's two that the committee may kind of conflict as far as voting is concerned. So once we do get in those voting results, if there are any conflicting issues, and certainly I'll share those results with the committee. So if there's any problems or issues that we need to raise at the in-person meeting, we can certainly set aside time to do that.
Great. Well, thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.